The most recent Marquette University Law School poll that was conducted in June found that Governor Walker's approval rating to be 48% among Wisconsin voters. A more recent survey conducted by the left-leaning Public Policy Polling last month put the governor's approval rating at 43%. And showed him trailing a generic Democrat opponent by 5 points. Here at WPR, we're doing an informal straw poll. You can go to the Ideas Network Facebook page to follow a link to our straw poll and place your vote. We're going to try to sketch out what the field looks like this hour with J.R. Ross. He's the editor at wispolitics.com. J.R., welcome to the program.
How are you doing this morning?
Doing well. So taking a look at the field, a pretty large field, what are the latest announcements in the campaign for governor?
Malin Mitchell, who is the president of the Statewide Firefighters Association, he's the latest candidate to get in. I think we have a field of roughly a dozen who have gotten some kind of public attention. Now, if you go look at the state website, there are like almost two dozen people who have registered to run for governor. Not all of them actually turn in the 2,000 signatures required to run by next year. But we've got roughly a field of a dozen Democrats who are getting some kind of attention in the media or on social media that are looking to run as an indicative of two things. One, to Republicans, this is a sign that Democrats don't have a strong front runner, that there are so many people running because there's no clear-cut favorite or nobody really a strong bench in Wisconsin for Democrats. So to them, these are C and D candidates, in their words. For Democrats, it's a sign of Walker's vulnerability because they view this as a sign that Governor Walker has kind of not really made a case for a third term. People are looking for change, and so there's an energized Democratic base who's looking to run against him next year.
So you've noticed that there's a lot of names out there on the Elections Commission website, but what are the requirements necessary to go to the next step?
You have to turn in, I believe it's by June 1st of next year, between 2,000 and 4,000 valid signatures from state residents, voters. You have to turn in an economic interest statement and meet some other requirements. I mean, they're formalities, but, you know, being able to collect 2,000 signatures is kind of like a very low bar to set to have to prove some kind of, like, organization viability to run for statewide office. I mean, honestly, the thing we're really looking for is, you know, reporters who covered this race. In January, we're going to see our first campaign finance reports from this field. They cover the period from July 1st through December 31st. That'll give us our first hint of who is putting together a viable campaign, at least fiscally speaking. Now, I realize that some people hate, you know, money in politics and don't think it's a real measure of strength, but for a statewide campaign, if you're going to run statewide and, you know, have a presence in markets like Green Bay and La Crosse and Madison and Milwaukee and Wausau, you have to have money to do that. And if you can't raise money, it raises questions about how viable a candidate you're going to be. So those reports in January will be a really big test for these candidates to prove if they're up to the task of running for governor.
How much money does it take to run a campaign these days?
That's an excellent question. And the question asked back is, what kind of campaign do you want to run? If you want to match Governor Walker, which, you know, in talking to most people in the Capitol, they don't think anybody's going to match Governor Walker. He is by far the best fundraiser I have ever seen in Wisconsin politics. This is a guy who we think, will raise $25, $30 million for his reelection bid next year, has raised money like that before, and there's no reason to think he can't again. So Tony Evers, for example, state superintendent, he's thrown a number like, I think it was around $20 million to run a credible campaign. I'm not sure if you need that much money to run, but that's what number he threw out there. For others, I mean, looking at typical statewide race, $10, $12, $14 million. I mean, these are all rough numbers. I can't really give you a good answer because I don't know what the race will look like next year for sure, what outside groups are going to do. Obviously, the more outside help you have, the less you have to raise as a candidate. So there are all kinds of things like that. And, you know, that it's hard to pick a dollar number of, like, this is what it's going to cost. But it will take a significant amount of money to challenge Governor Walker next year.
So let's say you have that $25 million in the bank. Where's the bulk of that money going to?
A lot of it's going to paid media. Now, we used to rely a lot on TV ads in terms of people running for office, but digital ads are becoming much bigger. Social media is becoming much bigger. Other kinds of outreach, radio ads, are also part of it, but a lot of it is going to be staff and ads and, quite frankly, raising more money. You have to spend money to raise money. Governor Walker, his model has been very interesting, where he relies a lot on people. You know, there's a lot of attention for his large donors, but he relies a lot on small dollar donors. So does Timmy Baldwin, by the way. And how they raise that money is they do regular appeals to them over email, through letters, asking, hey, you know, this is coming up. We need $25, $50, $10, $15, whatever it is. And these donors will regularly give them money with these letters. Those letters cost money to send out, so you spend a lot of money to raise. You spend a lot of money raising money in a campaign like this. That's where a lot of it's going to go.
Will they blow through all that cash they raise?
Oh yes, yeah. I have no doubt that Governor Walker will spend most of what he brings in. You know, for him, while he wouldn't really admit to it or acknowledge it during the interviews that he did with media ahead of his announcement, this is likely his last campaign as a state official. If Governor Walker runs for office after 2018, it's going to be for president, most likely. So this is a must-win for him to kind of remain viable nationally as a candidate. Now, we all think Governor Walker wants to run for president again someday. He said he would not do it during another term as governor, but he's only in his, late 40s or 50, something like around there. He has got plenty of time to run for president again down the line, and we think he wants to run for president. So he has to win this race. So he will go all out. And raise every dollar he can to try and secure that third term.
So, J.R. Ross, when you're a politician, you see a field of candidates that are at least a dozen who have serious interest in running. Would it make sense at this point to toss your hat in the ring now?
Well, go back to those January fundraising reports I was talking about. When we see those in another month and a half, it's going to be interesting because I get the impression from talking to folks from the Capitol that some people who are not in right now may see those reports and go, well, nobody's really, you know, taken a hold of this race and become a front runner, so maybe I can get in still and catch up to them financially because they aren't they don't have that much of a head start. The flip side is if a couple, three people do really take hold of this race and kind of get out there with a big number, it may discourage others from getting in and also may encourage people who are in right now but not doing well to drop out. So this field, while a dozen, 15, whatever it is right now, candidates, it will change over the course of the next 6 months, I get the impression, because of what's going to happen. Now, there are also the caveat that we have a couple people who are looking at running who haven't formally announced yet. Madison Mayor Paul Soglin, for example, he said that he will likely get in after the holidays. Mm. Kurt Cover's a businessman. He's looking at running still. Kelva Helen Roys, former state lawmaker from Madison, she is still looking at getting in, said she'd be if she does do it, it'd be after the holidays. So this field could get bigger before it possibly contracts.
J.R. Ross is with us. He's the editor at wispolitics.com. On this edition of the State Capitol Report, we're looking at the field of candidates for the 2018 gubernatorial race. You can also participate in the straw poll, and you can go to the Ideas Network Facebook page and cast your vote. Call in with your idea about who would be your choice for governor, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. JR, what does it say to you that so many Democrats are in the running to challenge the incumbent governor?
Well, one theme that I've heard in talking to people is that if you look at the national environment right now, it looks like 2018 should be a good year for Democrats. Now, I stress should. I hesitate to make any predictions about the environment in 2018 because it is a long way away still, and we made so many mistakes about the environment in 2016. Now, that said, historically in this country, the party in power in the White House has had a bad midterm election. It happened to Democrats in 2010 and 2014. So if the trend holds, then 2018 should be a bad year for Republicans. President Trump has got very bad poll numbers for incumbent. So you add those two things together, and you would think the Democratic base will be energized next year to turn out. So that's one piece of it. The other piece is you look at what happened in Wisconsin last year in the presidential primary. Bernie Sanders won the Wisconsin primary running an outsider campaign against Hillary Clinton, ran a very progressive campaign. So there's a thought among some Democrats that if you can find a way to tap into that progressive vein of the Democratic Party in the primary, and win the nomination, the environment alone next year should make you competitive with Governor Walker, even with the possible financial disparity. Now, I don't know if that's going to work out, but I get the impression that's one of the kind of thought processes going around of, hey, if you win the nomination, anything can happen. Oh, by the way, if you do have 12 candidates, let's say, on the ballot next year, the next question becomes, what's the slice of the pie you need to win the nomination?
And we are talking with J.R. Ross about the lineup for the 2018 gubernatorial race. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Who is your pick to be the next governor of Wisconsin? Do you think that person will win? Does anyone have a chance against Governor Scott Walker? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll return after a news update. More than a dozen Democrats have registered with the State Elections Commission to challenge two-term Republican Governor Scott Walker in the November 2018 general election. If only 10 of them end up on the August primary ballot, that would set a record for modern Wisconsin politics. According to Wisconsin Eye Analysis, there have been only six competitive Democratic primaries for governor since 1978, and most of those contests had only a handful of serious candidates. This time, there could be 8 or 10 Democrats with past political experience or enough cash to get their message across to voters. We're discussing the field, getting your early impressions with J.R. Ross. He's the editor at WisPolitics.com. Your insights at 800-642-1234. What do you consider when you throw your support to one candidate over the others? Is it about fundamental values, or do you think about how will they play out in the political game? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Bruce now, who joins us from Eau Claire. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there. I'd like to encourage folks to consider Mike McCabe for governor. He hasn't claimed a party affiliation as yet. His idea is principle before party, and his views really reflect Wisconsin public opinion on a variety of issues.
J.R. Ross, what do we know about Mike McCabe's campaign?
Well, Mike has spent, two decades as kind of an activist in the Capitol, working on things like campaign finance reform, to limit money in politics, other progressive things. He ran, I think, for the Assembly as a Democrat back in the mid-1990s, roughly, although I'm taking off the top of my head, so don't quote me on that one. But he has had an affiliation with the Democrats before. He said he's running for governor as a Democrat because you kind of have to be under a party banner to have a viable campaign or a viable shot to win the governor's office. It's interesting, he's trying to liken his campaign to Bernie Sanders. Remember, Bernie Sanders is independent, who ran for president as a Democrat. So Mike is trying to kind of say we're getting the same treatment, the Democratic Party. Interesting state party, Wisconsin, that they're saying, well, he isn't a member of the party, so there are some ways we're not going to do things for him we do for other people because he's not a member of the party. He could become a member if he wanted to, but he's chosen not to.
Mm.
So he's trying to run this kind of outsider campaign. Big question is he may have an appeal to a certain segment of the Democratic primary vote. The question for all these candidates is, can you get a big enough piece of that pie to win? In looking at it, people in the Capitol tend to group several candidates as kind of like the top tier, largely because they have, or we think they're going to have, access to resources. They've run statewide before or have some experience with that. And then there's another slice that people are trying to figure out, can they break into that top tier because of, issues A, B, or C? So it's all kind of to be determined who really is probably that front-running pack for the Democratic nomination.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for calling in. George in Milwaukee wants to piggyback off the Mike McCabe theme here and his appeal to rural voters. George, go ahead.
Right. I think that one of Walker's big strengths has been able to appeal to Wisconsin rural voters, not just people who live on farms, but people who live in smaller towns and even mid-sized cities in Wisconsin. And I think that McCabe has the possibility of probably breaking through that barrier where other Democratic candidates would not, even though McCabe has lived in Madison for the last 35 years. He has strong rural roots, and I think that he speaks to a lot of those issues that concern those folks that the Democrats have basically forgotten.
J.R. Ross, what about the rural connection?
Well, it's an interesting dynamic for Democrats. Not just state Democrats, but national Democrats have failed recently to connect with blue-collar white voters in rural areas. That has been a party problem nationally. It happened last fall, which helped bring the rise of President Trump, part of why President Trump won Wisconsin, the first Republican to do that since 1984. But while they're looking for somebody to connect to voters in rural Wisconsin, 40% roughly of the primary vote in a typical statewide race for Democrats come from three counties, Milwaukee, Dane, and Waukesha. Waukesha is always a surprise to people, but it's the one of the most populous counties in the state. There are a lot of, even though it's 60% Republican, there's a lot of Democrats there, but those three counties tend to drive or have a huge influence on what happens in primaries. So if you're from those places, you would have maybe a little bit of an inside track to those votes. So the question for Democrats is, how do they craft a message that appeals to where the voters are in this primary, that also can then appeal to rural voters for a general election to bring them along and try and recapture them after not doing a great job of that last year with Hillary Clinton at the top of the ticket?
George, thank you so much for calling in. JR, there's that statistic out there that most politicians do not win, are not successful in third terms as governor. Governor Walker had said in a Cap Times interview earlier this month, he said, "For me, it really doesn't matter who comes out of that primary. It'll be more of the same." What about third terms? And does that information seem to impact at all Governor Walker's reelection strategy?
Well, I mean, Tommy Thompson did win four terms. He didn't serve all four. The fourth one he went to serve in George Bush's cabinet, but it's been done before. Part of the issue is for Governor Walker is that in 2014, he won reelection right where he's usually been, like around 52% of the vote. Not long after, in fact, immediately after he won re-election, he began laying the foundation run for president. And you look at his poll numbers in the Marquette poll, they started to drop right away as he began looking running for president. And they, you know, bottomed out sometime in 2015. Governor Walker dropped out of the presidential race after briefly being in officially. And then he began this kind of statewide tour to listen to people. And as part of the strategy of the Walker campaign was to re-engage Wisconsinites, right? They knew he had an issue because he left the state to go run for president. They wanted to show that he was re-engaged and committed to Wisconsin. He did that tour, listened to what they were saying about, you know, Wisconsin issues, and then produced a budget last year, or this year, I'm sorry, that kind of addressed the issues he heard. One was K-12 education. So he put a big chunk of money into K-12 to try and shore up that vulnerability because we had the money to do it. What I'm getting at is that Governor Walker is seeing his poll numbers in the Marquette poll rebound gradually. Now, he's still underwater, or still under the 50% mark, I should say, in the Marquette poll. But they've been getting better. Their question becomes for Walker is, one, can he keep improving in those Marquette numbers? I mean, I'm using just Marquette because it's a consistent poll over a long period of time I can point to and see movement. There are other polls that have him upside down. But can he keep improving the Marquette numbers? And two, where's the right track, wrong track number in Wisconsin? In Marquette, it generally has been positive. And three, you don't beat somebody with nobody. So while a generic Democrat may beat Walker or be tied with him in some polls, there will be a contrast in the end between Governor Walker and X. So what does X bring to the table? What are his or her vulnerabilities? Walker has done a very good job before of, you know, attacking his opponents and trying to drive up their negatives. He will do that again. His campaign will, outside groups will, whether it comes forward. So it's not just about Governor Walker's numbers. It's about what, you know, the contrast between him and Democratic nominee.
Let's bring in Doug now in Stevens Point. Hi, Doug.
Hi there. I just I don't know who's going to be running or anything, but I am generally a Democratic voter. I hope that there's two things in whatever person's running message. And the one thing is that people are more important than money. I feel like that's something that's more a Democratic ideal than a Republican ideal. And the second is help for the school system, because I feel like Governor Walker has done nothing but try to destroy the UW system over the entire time that he's been in the state. So those two things are my two main concerns for whoever is running.
Well, Doug, thanks for calling in. JR, is there an issue that does resonate among voters that can carry a candidate to a win?
Well, it's interesting. He brings up the K-12 issue.
Mm-hmm.
If you look, Governor Walker in this budget allocated $649 million to K-12 education. It got knocked down a little bit by Republican legislature, like $640 million, but that is a centerpiece of his budget. You will hear Governor Walker talk about a quote-unquote historic investment in education in this budget, about property tax bills being lower in 2018 on the median valued home in Wisconsin they were in 2010 when he took office. You'll hear him talk about eliminating the state property tax, which is the forestry tax. But that K-12 piece will be a big chunk of it, in part because Governor Walker knows that was one of his vulnerabilities. Again, that listening tour that he did, he heard about that quite a bit, concern about schools. That's where he put the bulk of the additional dollars in this budget to try and address that. You know, we saw things like the number of referendum approved in the last few years are a message from voters of they are worried about their schools. One question for Walker is, was this investment in this current budget enough to kind of shore up that issue? And can Democrats, you know, use it to their advantage and say, look, it's still not enough? You know, the difficult thing for Democrats is now arguing that, yes, he put $650 million into schools, but it's still not enough. How do you make that argument effectively and explain, well, go back to, you know, 2011 with the cuts that were made and Act 10. It's a much longer explanation than Governor Walker's of historic investment in K-12.
What about his relationship and his impact to the UW? Will that factor into the campaign?
I believe roughly Wisconsin has about 1 in 4 adults has a college degree. I think we're kind of on the lower end of the scale. And what I'm bringing that up is that while people have a connection to the UW system, like with the Badgers, there are not as many people, adults, who had that college experience who maybe are that concerned about that issue. People who've gone to UW, trust me, are very concerned about that issue. People who work in the system are very concerned about that issue. But what I'm getting at is I don't know if that issue drives middle-of-the-road voters as much as it does people who have a serious interest in the system. It is definitely a tack line that revs up Democrats and the base. But as far as, you know, that being a driving issue in the campaign, I'm sure it'll come up. But I don't know if that is going to be a main issue come next fall.
We're talking with J.R. Ross. He's the editor at wispolitics.com. You can join in this conversation about the 2018 gubernatorial race. Who would you pick for the next governor of Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Paul from Eau Claire emailed. He said, I vote purple and populist. The candidate with the most populist positions will get my vote. Since the 2016 elections, populism is the way forward. JR, what about Paul's comment?
He's absolutely right. Your last caller talking about money, people over money, you are going to hear the word rigged 1,001 times in this election about the system being rigged against, you know, A, B, and C. Because people saw what Donald Trump did, where you have somebody who is very wealthy, who comes from a wealthy family, but was able to be a message bearer of a rigged system and appeal to blue-collar voters who feel like the system's rigged against them. I mean, that drives a lot of things we're seeing right now in politics. So I've talked to a number of Democratic operatives who think the message should be nothing else but populist themes of an economy stacked against you. This is rigged against you, you know, rigged for the wealthy, rigged for corporations. I mean, look at Tammy Baldwin's campaign. She talks about a rigged economy a lot already. That is definitely going to be a big message between now and next fall because they've seen that it appeals to people and that it works. What's been interesting about Wisconsin, about national politics is that we used to have wave elections, like once a generation, you know, roughly. 94 was one, and then we didn't have another one really until 2008. Or six and eight.
Mm-hmm.
We've had wave elections in 6, 8, 10, 14, and 16. That is really unique. That's totally unique to me in national politics, to see people are angry, and I've yet to see politicians figure out how to address that anger. Donald Trump's going to capture it last year. It's been building for a long time, and people have not quite got the answer they want yet, so that's still a raw issue for folks.
Let's unpack Foxconn. How might Foxconn change the discussion about business and jobs on the campaign trail?
That's going to be an interesting issue. For Governor Walker, another issue he's had is that he promised to create 250,000 new jobs in his first term. We are now in year 7. He's not hit that number yet. He has changed the conversation, or tried to at least, to not creating more jobs, but filling jobs that we have, because we need to train more people. Using Foxconn is another example of more jobs being created and a demand for more workers. He is looking at this as a transformative deal for Wisconsin that could have a ripple effect across the state. For Democrats, this is an issue that at first they seem to kind of be, I don't know, say stunned by, but kind of like unsure how to address. At first, like, wow, this is a big deal. How do we address this? Well, now they found their hook, and that is it's $3 billion in taxpayer money to assist one corporation in Wisconsin. Why? Why is that a good deal for taxpayers? It's not the state wouldn't break even, I think, in the best scenarios for like 25 years or something like that. So they're using this as another thing to rig the economy in favor of one company at the expense of the average taxpayer. Now, what I've been looking for in talking to people is what progress you have to see with this deal in the coming months that it is or is not an issue for Governor Walker next fall. If you see a foundation going up, walls going up, factories being built in southeastern Wisconsin, you know, people being hired, that may blunt that attack a little bit, because Walker can point and say, look, we have progress on this. This factory can employ thousands of people. If there isn't progress, if there are no walls going up, there are no people being hired, or very few, or it's falling short of expectations already, that can become fodder for Democrats. Say, look, Foxconn's promised things to people in other states, other countries, and failed to deliver. We're not seeing the promises happen here in Wisconsin because of A, B, and C. Therefore, this is an issue, and that may be a fodder for them to bolster their argument of this is not a good deal for Wisconsin taxpayers.
Well, some Republicans, and we're about to go to a break here, but some Republicans have been saying that electing a Democrat as governor puts the Foxconn deal at risk. Is there any validity to that?
You know, possibly. I'm not a lawyer that can go over the contract and tell you, like, this provision mm-hmm. says this. But the question is, would any of these Democrats, if elected, try to tear up the contract to start over? What would happen if they did that? Several have said they would try to negotiate better terms. What would that look like? Would the contract allow? I'm not sure that just electing somebody different would totally undermine that proposal. But Governor Walker's made the argument that he's a better partner for Foxconn if he's reelected than having a Democrat in office.
We're talking with J.R. Ross. He's the editor at WisPolitics.com. Your thoughts on the 2018 gubernatorial election at 800-642-1234. Who is your pick to be the next governor of Wisconsin? Do you think this person will win? What does your vote mean? 800-642-1234. We'll return after a check of the latest headlines. Foxconn Technology Group could come up a lot as the candidates in the race for governor give stump speeches and talk with voters. Some of the Democratic candidates running for governor have vowed to try to block or renegotiate the $3 billion Foxconn factory deal. The incentives are aimed at bringing a flat-screen display plant and thousands of jobs to Racine County. Voters select Wisconsin's next governor in less than 1 year, and the campaigns are crystallizing in this edition of the State Capitol Report. We're getting a snapshot of the competition with our guide, J.R. Ross. He's political editor at wispolitics.com, and your thoughts on the 2018 gubernatorial race that is shaping up at 800-642-1234. Who is your pick to be the next governor of Wisconsin? Do you think that person will win? Do you think anyone has a chance against two-time governor Scott Walker? Let's discuss. 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. JR, lawmakers voted to change mining regulations in the state. Governor Walker is expected to sign the bill. Does that give Democrats a platform in a state with a history of environmental protection?
Good question. Well, I think that will motivate primary voters more than anything else for Democrats. I don't know if that's a swing issue. Now, obviously, if you live near a possible sulfide mine, that might be a different story. But for Democrats, I'm sure they will build a case with their primary voters of, here's another example of Governor Walker and Republicans undoing things that you as Democrats like. So in that regard, sure, again, hard to tell right now if that's going to be a driving issue in the general election a year from now.
In what ways does the national political climate that changes day to day, how does that influence the election for governor, if any?
Well, talk a little about the environment. We're looking at President Trump's poll numbers. You know, for Governor Walker, it's an interesting question of how you navigate that. Do you want, if you're Governor Walker, do you want Donald Trump to come campaign for you in Wisconsin? Right now, the poll numbers he has, maybe not. But if you don't embrace Trump, then do these Trump voters, and we saw in northern and western Wisconsin, will they turn out for you next fall? Do you want President Trump to raise money for you? You know, things like that. It's interesting for Republicans. They saw a winning formula last year they hadn't seen before. It's a traditional Republican base turning out. Look more at the Ron Johnson numbers than the John Trump ones, but the traditional Republican base turned out for Ron Johnson, who then benefited from these blue-collar voters in western and northern Wisconsin coming out for Donald Trump. He beat Russ Feingold by a healthy margin last year. So Republicans say, hey, usually in a presidential year, Democrats have the advantage. Republicans won Wisconsin in a presidential year with Ron Johnson winning that race between that coalition. Can they recreate that next year? But if you embrace Trump to bring out those Trump voters, do you lose suburban and exurban voters who've been turned off by Donald Trump? You know, how do you kind of navigate that terrain? Interesting to watch between now and next fall.
James on Facebook says, I would vote for Kathleen Vinehout, a well-educated, experienced state senator. What about her campaign?
She was run for governor before. She ran in the recall election in 2012, got 4% in the primary. She was kind of laying a foundation to run again. In 14, was in a car wreck and banged up her arm and decided not to run. So she has done a very good job of cultivating a relationship with a lot of grassroots voters in the party. Even though she's not been known as a very good fundraiser, they have the kind of money to run a viable statewide campaign. For example, we do a straw poll every year at the Democratic Convention. She's won that for the one we've done because she goes to these small county events out in rural Wisconsin and connects with voters. A big issue for her, and one that we're kind of interesting to watch, is she wrote a letter on her office letterhead, kind of as a character witness or vouching for a guy who worked for the state government who was accused of, I believe, possession of child pornography. Now, he had not been convicted yet. He had been charged. But that letter in any campaign is going to be an issue, let alone one for governor. And if she were the nominee against Scott Walker, it'd be a huge issue that they would pound on a lot. That is a letter that I've got. I don't know many people know about it now, are following it right now, but in talk to people in the Capitol, they think that letter is a very big problem for Kathleen Vinehout in a statewide race. And even if she didn't run for governor, ran for re-election for state senate seat, would be an issue in that race. That is, those are hard things to overcome in politics in general, being associated with something like that.
Would you say that Wisconsin voters are more insulated, perhaps, from the national scene, the national issues, when they vote for state offices, or do those issues play a role in decisions?
2006, the elections were nationalized, and Democrats won a lot of seats in the legislature that they weren't expected to because there was such a wave. For Democrats, same thing in 2010 for Republicans. They won seats that they normally wouldn't have because the races became nationalized. So we're not insulated at all. It's interesting, it's going to be an off-year election, so you don't have the presidential race on the ballot. But the president, in some ways, will have an influence next year. So I don't think we're insulated at all from national trends. And it's going to be interesting to see if there is a snapback against the White House, how big is that wave? And can Democrats be in position to take advantage of it? With this wide field of candidates for governor, there may be a strong candidate who emerges over time. But you have to have somebody who's got the campaign put together, the message that's right, to capture any kind of a wave. You can't just be a bad candidate, I'm trying to say, and win in a wave year. You have to have somebody with a good campaign, a good message, to take advantage of it if it does develop.
You just mentioned this letter from Kathleen Vinehout. Does it matter how Wisconsin gubernatorial candidates respond as we watch allegations of sexual misconduct ripple through our political system?
It's a good question because it's still in the initial stages. I mean, you look at one hand at President Trump. He had all kinds of allegations against him last fall, and they didn't seem to bother. They bothered a lot of people, but not enough that he wouldn't win the election, right? Now, was that a question of people weren't bothered by that, or they were more bothered by Hillary Clinton? That's, a good question. But right now, we're in an environment where these things are flying left and right. As more allegations come out, women come forward, what's the impact going to be? I'm not sure right now. We know. I mean, you have like people like Al Franken up in Minnesota saying he planned to go to work today and try and earn back the trust of Minnesota voters. Can you earn back trust? I've been accused of things like that. You have Roy Moore in Alabama, who'll be on the ballot December 12th, can he overcome or withstand the allegations against him? These are all kind of questions up in the air, but there are more of them coming out. It's going to be interesting. You have read stories that talk about this could be the year that we have, think of the year of the woman a few years back. This could be the year of the woman on steroids, where you have more women encouraged to run, in part because of being unhappy about President Trump and what happened last fall, in part because of the environment that we're seeing a surge of female candidates out there running. That would be really interesting to see.
Let's go to Greg in Middleton. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
Go ahead.
My question is about Governor Walker and the budget. Basically, he took money away from the Zoo Interchange project, which is an ongoing project and the busiest intersection interchange in the state. And now he's funding road building in Racine County to help develop the Foxconn thing. So he's robbing Peter to pay Paul, and, is that going to have any effect on how voters, I see it as a big issue. The Zoo Interchange is in Milwaukee is the largest interchange in the state, and to stop building on that to accommodate Foxconn, I think is just wrong.
JR, go ahead. Thanks, Greg.
So, there are several stages of the Zoo Interchange. One is the core. The core is the major intersection, right? They're going to finish that, I believe, next year, everything goes on time. What he's talking about is the north leg of the zoo. It's the next phase of that project. In the transportation crunch that we have in this budget, Governor Walker refused to raise the gas tax or registration fee to pay for more road projects. Republican lawmakers didn't want to borrow more money to keep doing these things because we're eating up more of our income in the transportation fund just for paying off debt. So they didn't do the zoo, the north leg of the zoo, but in the separate Foxconn bill, they allocated roughly $250 million to continue expanding I-94 north-south to accommodate traffic there. I'm sure that's going to be more of a local issue for people, but it plays into a bigger issue that Democrats hope to raise of Republicans, in their minds, failing to adequately fund infrastructure in Wisconsin and putting us with roads that are, I can't remember where they rank in the 50 states, but saying that they're not adequately funding our infrastructure, our schools, and other things the way that we want them to. So I'm sure it's going to play in that argument for Democrats.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for calling in. JR, do you see the beginnings of an innovative campaign, or is everyone running a business-as-usual strategy? We see Governor Walker staffing up with people who have operated his campaigns before.
Oh, yeah, Governor Walker, these are people he trusts that he's worked with before. They've found what they believe is a winning formula. So he's going to stick with what's worked for him before. With Democrats, it's going to be interesting if they find a different message or if they can tap into that kind of a populist message with folks that captures this feeling out there, anger, whatever you want to call it. I'm not sure who's going to emerge from that field and be front runners. I'm not sure what message is going to really resonate with people, but they're trying right now to figure that out. And when you think about Governor Walker and the money he could raise, they know they can't match him dollar for dollar, right? So can you find alternative ways to run an effective campaign that doesn't include just trying to outraise the other guy? That's going to be interesting to watch with Democrats, of what kind of campaigns do they run next year.
And final thoughts on what you are watching for as the year unfolds.
Who else gets in? Those January fundraising reports, who proves viability, how's that shape the race, and what's the environment going to be like next year? I mean, those are kind of the big things. I do get the impression from talking to folks that while we have 12, 15, whatever it is, Democrats right now who are registered to run, come next August when the primary is going to happen, that field will have narrowed down, either by people dropping out or whatnot, or people who have moved to the top tier. We'll have a better idea of who really is in competition for that nomination. And then it's a matter of how they come in that primary, what the environment is like, and can they match Governor Walker in some ways? Not necessarily dollar for dollar, but with a message that resonates that proves the Democrats can not only turn out their voters in Milwaukee and Madison, but appeal to people out state with a message on the economy that we still feel like it's not really working for us, for a lot of people. It's not really working for me. So what's going on? Can they pin that on Governor Walker and make him be part of the problem?
Well, J.R., thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. Have a great day.
You too. That was J.R. Ross, the editor at WisPolitics.com. This hour of the morning show was produced by Keely Baltina and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation is on the Ideas Network.